Alitalia has been sold, finally. A bailout for Detroit may look a lot like the airline bailout. And Boeing will lay off 800 in Wichita. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, November 20th, 2008. ANN has learned that the bankrupt Italian national carrier, Alitalia, has won government approval to be taken over by a group of private investors. The approval was widely expected, as the airline's been losing about €1 million a day, and political and union bickering had scared off all the other potential bidders. CNN reports Economic Development Minister Claudio Antonio Scajola has signed off on a sale for just over €1 billion, or about $1.3 billion U.S. The buyer is Compagnia Aerea Italiana, or CAI, described as a group of private investors who will be free to seek another airline with which to partner. Presumably, the private interests will be freer to operate without the political interference, which scuttled earlier sale attempts. Unions representing Alitalia employees have vehemently protested the proposed sale, in part by implementing a work-to-rule action, which has slowed operations and put the company even further in the hole financially. This may come as bad news for members of the United Auto Workers, but the old Air Transportation Stabilization Board, which oversaw the federal bailout of the airlines following the 9/11 attacks, is being eyed now as a model for how a bailout of domestic automakers might work. The Wall Street Journal reports the airline industry rescue, the last by the feds for a non-financial sector of the economy, was a hard pill to swallow for the industry, but actually wound up profiting the taxpayers by $300 million. There are parallels between the two cases. Both involve troubled companies seeking government-subsidized loans, blaming the crisis on factors beyond their control. Congressman Barney Frank wants to set up a board to conduct rigorous oversight of automakers who accept federal loans, receive stock warrants, and demand viable restructuring plans before handing out any money. This idea has grim echoes for auto workers. In the airline bailout, managers gave up pay and perks, but unions faced the choice between long-term concessions to reduce costs or the loss of their jobs completely if the companies folded. The terms were so rigorous that some troubled airlines, including American and Delta, walked away. Nine others were turned down by the ATSB. Jeffrey Shane is a former ATSB member and Undersecretary of Policy at the U.S. Department of Transportation. He recalls, quote, "We were supposed to act like investment bankers at the end of the day. We were supposed to do things prudently. We made money," unquote. Democrats and Republicans alike grilled the Pentagon's chief weapons buyer Wednesday for spending $90 million less than authorized on F-22 fighters. Congress authorized $523 million for F-22s this fiscal year. No more than $140 million was to be spent immediately to order four more of the planes to avoid a shutdown of F-22 production before Inauguration Day in January. The decision on the rest of the appropriation was to be left to the incoming Obama administration. Now, the Pentagon really doesn't want the program. Undersecretary of Defense John Young has spent just $50 million of that $140 million authorized to keep the program going until January 21st, one day after President-elect Obama takes office. And so, congressmen, many of whom count on defense pork to get reelected, convened a hearing of the House Armed Services Air and Land Forces Subcommittee to vent their fury for 2.5 hours. Subcommittee Chair Neil Abercrombie, a Hawaii Democrat, warned Young that the 2009 Defense Authorization Act, quote, "is not negotiable. You will obey what the bill says," unquote. Phil Gingrey, a Georgia Republican, asked, quote, "is it up to you to decide which laws you will follow and which you will flout?" unquote. When all the chest-thumping ended, Young reminded lawmakers that the bill authorized up to $140 million, not a minimum of $140 million, meaning he was, in fact, compliant with the law. The Air Force Times report congressional aides added, "there really isn't anything Congress can do to force the Pentagon to spend all that money." One thing is certain, the Obama team is going to have at least one very short deadline the morning after the inauguration. There's been no official statement from Boeing on a revised airliner delivery schedule following a 57-day strike by the International Association of Machinists, but the Wall Street Journal is reporting sources familiar with the matter say deliveries will be set back 10 weeks. Boeing Commercial Airlines CEO Scott Carson held a conference call with investors on Wednesday, but declined to offer any specifics. Business Week reports he did predict that the airliner ordering frenzy has peaked and orders during 2008 will be down from last year. Quote, "This year will certainly be a lower orders year than the previous three, which were unbelievably strong. Everything that we see in the world today would suggest that next year will be down," unquote. Boeing has a total backlog of 3,734 airliners. Some airlines are anxious to get their planes, especially those waiting to retire older, less fuel-efficient jets. Other airlines losing revenue during the economic slump are quietly thankful that the strike will allow them to postpone taking deliveries without paying penalties. Boeing did make one official announcement Wednesday, and it's more bad news for Wichita. The company says it will cut about 800 positions at its Integrated Defense Systems facility during 2009, blaming the end of some programs and the delay in the U.S. Air Force's KCX tanker program. The layoffs will impact managers and both salaried and hourly workers. The first spacewalk of the NASA STS-126 mission answered a question which has probably been asked by a lot of kids at one time or another. What happens if you drop a wrench 190 miles above the ground? Mission specialists Heidi Stefanishin Piper and Steve Bowen conducted a six-hour spacewalk on Tuesday, and they got through their to-do list and more. But Stefanishin Piper discovered that a grease gun inside her tool bag had leaked. When she tried to clean up the mess, she lost her grip on the bag, and it floated away. NASA controllers are tracking the tool bag. Another spacewalk is planned for today. Up next on ANN, business aircraft are selling well in the Middle East. Student pilot hijinks prove fatal in California. And Lynx Aviation gets a new president. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher-performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-Cessna.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for November 20th. I'm Paul Plagg. The credit crunch was nowhere in sight this week at MEBA, the Middle East Business Aviation 2008 show in Dubai. The three-day event wrapped up on Tuesday with close to $1.5 billion in new aircraft orders for exhibitors. In fact, organizers say MEBA 2008 was over three times the size of last year's inaugural event. 250 companies from 30 countries participated. Ali Al-Nakbi, founder of the Middle East Business Aviation Association, was beaming. Quote, "Exhibitors have told me that they had direct access to the people they needed to do business with. After all the deals and announcements we have seen at MEBA 2008, we can be assured that the market is growing and that there is plenty of confidence out there," unquote. The National Transportation Safety Board Wednesday issued an updated factual report regarding a September runway incursion in Allentown, Pennsylvania. The case involved a general aviation aircraft and a regional jet airliner headed for Chicago. On September 19th at 7:38 p.m. Eastern Time, Mesa Air Shuttle Flight 7138, a CRJ-700 with 56 passengers and a crew of four, aborted a takeoff at about 120 knots, skidding around a Cessna R-172K that had just landed and was still taxiing on the runway. The crew of the Mesa jet estimated they missed by 10 feet. In creating a timeline of the communications leading up to the incident, NTSB determined that the Cessna pilot was given taxi instructions after landing at about 7:37 p.m. A few seconds later, the Mesa jet was cleared for takeoff. Almost a minute after he was given taxi instructions, the Cessna pilot told the tower he'd missed his turnoff at taxiway Alpha 4. The controller told him, quote, "No delay, turn immediately," and the pilot acknowledged, but by then, it was too late. At 7:38:16, the Mesa pilot radioed, quote, We got it, Tower. We're going to need to go back to the gate, unquote. The Mesa air crew decided to cancel the flight and have the aircraft inspected. NTSB says its investigation has included interviews with both pilots, controllers on duty at the time, and FAA managers. An ill-advised joyride has ended in a terrible tragedy for a Chinese flight student in California. The Merced Sun Star reports the 26-year-old Chinese national was one of two Sierra Academy of Aeronautics students who flew a Cessna 152 to Visalia and back on Saturday. Both students had solo endorsements, but a student can't legally carry a passenger. Merced County Sheriff spokesman Tom McKenzie theorizes the pair probably tried to run quickly from the plane after landing when they saw a fuel truck approaching, afraid they'd be reported for the illegal flight. The student in the left seat exited without injury, but the other student was struck in the head by the propeller. The man died of his injuries on Tuesday. The victim's identity was not released, pending notification of his family and the Chinese consulate. Rashid Yahya, director of flight operations at the school, told the Sun Star the man was a good student. An investigation is underway by both the FAA and the NTSB. Frontier Airlines announced this week that VP of Flight Operations Cameron Kenyon has been named interim president of its Denver-based regional subsidiary, Lynx Aviation, effective tomorrow. Kenyon replaces Tom Nunn, who recently resigned. Frontier CEO Sean Menke observed, quote, "Cam has had a tremendous career with Frontier, so moving him to the top leadership post at Lynx was a natural for me. His background as a pilot and chief pilot, and then as vice president of flight operations at Frontier, gives Cam an ideal perspective on running our regional operation," unquote. Lynx Aviation was formed by Frontier Airlines Holdings in September 2006 and began operations in December of 2007. The feeder airline supports routes into Frontier's hub at Denver using a fleet of Bombardier Q400 turboprops. Still ahead, Dassault moves to increase its stake in its avionics provider. Irish investigators reveal more details about a scary flight. And NASA has created a 20 million mile wireless internet connection. You're listening to AeroNews.
Okay. Right up front, let me say that Garmin does not give tax advice. We have lawyers who cringe at the very thought of suggesting there might be tax advantages to buying a new Garmin avionics system this year.
Did he say tax advantages?
Could that be construed as tax advice, either express or implied?
Yeah, like I said, lawyers. So I guess I won't be telling you that this year Congress is offering special bonus depreciation up to 50% in year one for qualified business equipment placed in service during 2008. Business equipment like, say, a new Garmin avionics stack. But you didn't hear that from me, right?
What did he just say?
Okay, better check with your tax consultant for guidance and your Garmin dealer for the installation. Garmin. Follow the leader.
See your tax advisor for guidance.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, November 20th. I'm Paul Plagg. Dassault Aviation, the French manufacturer of the Falcon business jet, has reportedly offered to expand its stake in the French avionics manufacturer Thales SA by acquiring a 20.8% interest currently owned by Alcatel-Lucent SA, the telephone equipment manufacturing company. Bloomberg reports Dassault's bid is 1.56 billion euros, that's about $2 billion U.S. That would be a per-share price of 38 euros, or about the level at which Thales was trading a year ago. Its shares have since dropped 25% during 2008. Thales is Europe's largest defense electronics manufacturer and builds the electronics for Dassault's Rafale fighter jets. The French government has an order for 294 of those jets, and analysts believe Dassault will step up its efforts to market the jet to foreign buyers as a hedge against an expected slump in the sales of its civilian planes. Dassault and Alcatel-Lucent say in their joint statement that talks will continue through December 15th. Alcatel could certainly use the cash. The company has lost 4.8 billion euros since 2006, and the stock has been trading under 2 euros per share. If the deal is approved, Dassault would own about 26% of Thales and could seek to expand its stake further. The French government also has a 27% stake in the avionics firm. In turn, 46% of Dassault is owned by Airbus parent EADS, the European Aeronautic Defense and Space Company. Back in January, we reported on what had to be a scary event for the crew of a transatlantic Air Canada flight. At the time, little information was released, but France's AFP News has published new details from a report by the Irish Transport Ministry. The 767 was headed from London to Toronto with 146 passengers and a crew of nine on January 28th. The captain told investigators his first officer arrived late for the flight and looked, quote, quite harried, unquote. Out over the Atlantic Ocean, the FO repeatedly complained he was very tired, and the captain suggested he take a break. The report says that as the flight approached the mid-Atlantic, the co-pilot, quote, began conversation which was rambling and disjointed in nature and not at all in character, as the commander knew him to be an outgoing and talkative person, unquote. The man then, quote, became belligerent and uncooperative, which convinced the commander he was now dealing with a crew member who was effectively incapacitated, unquote. When ordered to secure his seatbelt, he was described as unresponsive. Other crew members removed the man from the controls, and he was cared for by British and Canadian doctors on board. They described his condition as confused and disoriented. The captain diverted to Ireland, and a flight attendant with the commercial pilot's license got in the right seat. Irish air accident investigator Leo Murray praised the captain for his tact and understanding in handling the situation. The identities of that captain and his stricken co-pilot have never been released. The first officer was treated in an Irish hospital for 11 days following that incident. Air Canada stressed at the time that passenger safety was never compromised. Thomas Mark Huey is one lucky guy. The Contra Costa Times reports the FAA has concluded it doesn't have enough evidence to cite him for several alleged buzzing incidents over a Concord, California neighborhood in July. The FAA did confirm a Beechcraft Bonanza belonging to Huey was seen flying low over the neighborhood several times over a two-week period, and that the pilot's ex-girlfriend lived in the area. But witnesses could not offer confident estimates of his altitude, and there was no radar data available. Officials at the Contra Costa County Airport received over 20 complaints stemming from the overflights. The FAA contacted Huey July 24th, which coincidentally is when the buzzings stopped. And finally, NASA announced this week it successfully tested the first deep space communications network modeled on the Internet. Engineers from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena used software called Disruption Tolerant Networking, or DTN, to transmit dozens of space images to and from a NASA science spacecraft located about 20 million miles from Earth. Adrian Hook, team lead and manager of space networking, explained the significance. Quote, this is the first step in creating a totally new space communications capability, an interplanetary internet, unquote. 10 years ago, NASA teamed with Google VP Vint Cerf, who co-designed the TCP/IP data format on which the internet is built, to develop the DTN protocol. The interplanetary internet must be robust enough to handle transmissions that are delayed by long distances, solar storms, and interruptions caused by the movements of planets and asteroids. There are 10 nodes so far on this early interplanetary network. In the next round of testing, new DTN software will be loaded on the International Space Station next summer. Eventually, the system will support complex missions involving multiple landed, mobile, and orbiting spacecraft. The bad news? The latency from Mars will be as much as 20 minutes. That'll be a real handicap if you're playing World of Warcraft. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is Alan Liskars, AOPA Airport Support Network volunteer for the Biddeford Municipal Airport in Maine. Supporters of the airport beat back an Election Day referendum to close it, and there are lessons for all of us. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.